Hello, folks. This is Bell, and I just wanted to thank you for listening to Thirst World Problems. And I also wanted to let you know that this is part two of our interview with Kurt Maitland. Kurt Maitland is a whiskey taster and works for Whiskey Selections and is an expert when it comes to drinking. He also has a cocktail book out, so if you're interested, check that out on Amazon. Now we're going to hop back into the interview right where we left off. So we're going to be talking about sake, and then we're going to get into the rest of the episode where we talk about alternatives, some hidden gems, as well as some distilleries and spirits owned by people of color. Enjoy, and make sure you visit us at thirstworldproblems.ca for extra content and to find all of our contact information. And please share the episode with any of your friends that may love whiskey.
Welcome to the Thirst World Problems Podcast, where we talk about drinks, current events, music, and more. Now, here's your host, Nick Dugal, and his panel of experts, B, Bell, and the infamous Doc.
Actually, sake works well for a highball as well. That's another one here, you know, because again, I just think like it's refreshing. It's hot outside, you know, it's already cold, you get some good ice, and just chill, you know, with that. And again, easy to make.
I'm gonna start doing that. I'm gonna start transitioning to sake a little bit more. I feel like over here, I feel like it's very not utilized as much as it should be.
I'll give you another hint. If you want another brown liquor that isn't whiskey, but people sleep on, You go Armagnac and cognac, especially Armagnac, because Armagnac, it's underpriced for what it is. Like you can get a 50-year-old Armagnac for $200. You're not getting a 50-year-old Scotch for $200. You know what I mean? It's like
that's 50. So you said 50 years old?
50 years old.
Wow.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you want to get something with an age. I was saying like how I got it for my friend. My friend wanted something for his son. You want something old, you're not rocking a big budget, you can get a 25 or 30 year old, you know, of those and at a really good price. And they're all unique because you get it from different vintages from different places in France, and they taste good. They're easy enough to drink. You can use them in cocktails, but you don't have to, you know, it'll do anything you would do with whiskey. And, you know, they'll even be high in proof, but they're not going to have that price. You know what I mean?
Why is that so much cheaper than anything else?
I think the deal with it is that with whiskey, what you're paying for, and this is going to seem weird, what you're paying for is the whiskey that's not there. So whiskey evaporates. And so the older the whiskey is, like you have a barrel, and let's say the barrel has 100 liters in it. By the time you wait, like, let's say 10 years, you might have lost 20 liters, just evaporation. It's soaked into the wood, it's evaporated, whatever else. The older that barrel gets, it's there, it's in the warehouse, it's soaked into the wood of the warehouse. Mm. And so when you sell it and the price is high, it's like they're paying for the scarcity because that barrel gets a 40-year-old whiskey. That barrel, maybe I only got 10 liters in that thing. Maybe I only got 100 liters in it, and it had 700 from the get-go. So that's why it's expensive. It's the same thing with something like bourbon. So like guys go nuts for shit like Pappy. It's not like Pappy can be great, but I've had better bourbons, and the price point's ridiculous. Granted, it's not the brand's fault. It's that every retailer, they end up getting a bottle or two. So they charge that shit. They charge you like it's a brick of gold because like the most expensive price, I think it's supposed to be like $250, you know, like for the 23-year-old. And you see that shit going for like $4,000. It's going for $4,000 because the person who had it, whatever store it was, they got one bottle. I know big ass stores in New York where they like, they may give them 5 bottles for the year. They're like, what am I going to do with that? You know, I'm not going to, you know, put it out. Let's like me just walk in there to scrap all up and pay the retail price for it. I know people where they're like, I just call up my best customer and say, yo, I'll give you this for $400. You know, I already got their money. You know what I mean? They're already giving me money on a regular basis. I give them this shit to keep them happy. So that's how that rolls out.
Nice, nice. Fortunately, that doesn't happen here for us because ours is government regulated.
Right.
Which kind of sucks. I think it sucks. I think we talked about this before, guys, right?
We talked about this last, yeah, it sucks. Last
podcast, so. Yeah. just having it government regulated, obviously pricing is higher, you know, there's I feel like there's less small businesses now in where we are and I think if that ever happened, we would have a situation like what you just said. You just have a better customer relation, right? You're always getting buyers and, you know, you're just trying to make everyone happy. So,
well, there are pros and cons. Like in the States, my dad lives in Pennsylvania, and in Pennsylvania, it's state run. So what I'll say is this, the selection isn't as good as it is in New York, but they've kind of locked down the prices. So when Japanese whiskey got hot and Yamazaki 12 started to spike, I was still buying it cheap in PA, like to the point where we're driving down from Jersey and New York, and they cleaned out like the whole eastern part of the state because they were just coming to buy cases. They're just like, oh, you guys selling it for $80 and it's like 140 in New York? Screw that. I'll get me a car and load up. And that's what they were doing, you know? So, I mean, there are some advantages. Hopefully, I mean, do your stores let you guys do special order? At least say like, hey, I want to get this
thing. Yeah, I believe you can do that.
Yeah, you can special order things. But again, when you do that, it's like you're like last priority kind of deal. So it's like you have to ask.
You know, you might get it. You might get it here.
Exactly. Which again, kind of sucks because, you know, like what we do is we just go to province and go pick some stuff up, which is cheaper, and then just drive it back, which is in the end, you're getting more out of it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other problem with special ordering is that you have to do it by the case over here. So
you get to say, well, I just want a bottle.
No.
You can't go a bottle.
You gotta get like a 3-pack or a 6-pack. Which makes the price so much more. Because, like, I didn't ask for 3.
or 12.
Probably end up buying 3 anyway. A couple months later or something.
Yeah, you buy 3, you have one in the car, you just... then you got 2 left, right? You're good to go.
I mean, that's not wrong. There's certain whiskeys where, you know, if they fall off a truck and I end up with, like, a couple, I'm like, I don't mind. It's like, I got 6. That's fine. I'll drink them, you know.
So what's the summer drink right now for you? What do you got in mind?
I still drink whiskey straight through, but some rum with ice, some old rum. That's rum's another one where you can get old rum cheap because you can get like a 40-year-old rum and it's like, oh, it's $50. Yeah. So yeah, same thing. Nice cube ice, you know, pour 3 fingers in. To sit with that shit, watch some TV or listen to some music or whatever else. And it's relaxing. And it's also like you think summer. Even though it's weird with COVID, it's like it's summer, but like I don't see shit. You know, I barely leave. I leave to go get food at this point.
Like, why is rum so cheap though? Like, even with different aging on it, why is it just so easy to buy? And
I mean, I think one, it's, and this goes also with the Armagnac, it's like, it's not valued the same as scotch. Like really old scotch, it's treated like a luxury item. So it's priced like a luxury item. Whereas rum, it's like the process is easier. Apparently it's cheaper I would think you lose even more because you make rum in a hotter environment than Scotland. So you think that they're pissed, you know, like they have the same amount of evaporation or angel share, if not more, but they might make a whole lot more of it and nobody's spending crazy money to get rum. So they're like, all right, that's fine. You know, I'm curious if the demand goes up because what's happened is when whiskey became popular again, everybody started selling you aged whatever. That's when you started getting like, oh, well here's this aged tequila and here's this aged rum. And every spirit, they're like, oh, well, let me just put a couple years on it and maybe people will like it more. Put a little color on it, whatever the case may be. But yeah, for some reason, rum is still cheap. I should actually check. I'm officially curious. But it's definitely a good gift where you can, you know, if you got somebody who's going to shame you for age, you can get some old ass shit cheap, you know.
It's just weird because rum's been around for how many years?
But is there
centuries that you could say, but like, it's just, it just feels like rum isn't really as popular, but like, I feel like there's not, there needs to be different mixes with it to make it popular. You know what I mean? Like,
is it a cultural component also, almost
like,
though?
It's the whole luxury thing. It's like people equate luxury with your item and they can charge crazy ass prices. It's like, you know, a Bentley is a car. It's a fancy car with better seats and you know, whatever else. But there's no difference between that and a Camry, other than the fact that, like, I spent more on the materials. With the case of rum, the connotation is more like tropical drinks and cheap parties. So, like, it's hard to tell somebody, hey, you know what, you need to spend $300 for this bottle of rum. They're like, F that, why? I had a bottle of rum for $30. What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Is there a cultural component to, like, if we're talking about scotch and whiskey, scotch is prepared in Scotland, brought over, and rum, like we said, like, usually in the Caribbean countries, and, like, that's kind of where it is, and it's kind of brought over, and it's always been in those type of communities. Is that any validity, or am I just reaching here?
No, I mean, I think there's certainly a possibility of that. That same thing happened with Japanese until Japanese whiskey got scarce. So, like, when the Japanese tried to bring whiskey here in the 70s, people were like, what's this shit? Why the hell would I buy cheap Japanese whiskey when I can go buy cheap Irish, I can get bourbon, I can get scotch, I can get blends? Why am I buying Japanese? Screw that. So when the Japanese came back, they came back with, like, high-end whiskeys. That's the Yamazaki 18s and all the, like, expensive shit. And they won all these awards. And once they won those awards, people are like, oh, I'm going to pay the money for it. You know, I'm going to spend the money to get these things. Whereas rum's kind of never had that moment. People like rum. There are lots of people who are fans of it, but there's no time. Most people who drink rum, they're like, oh, I like the rum with the coconut flavor in it. And they like the flavored shit. Like, there's no high-end rum that's captured the conscious of, you know, the buying public where they'll drop $200 for it. You know, it's like because of what it is. And maybe it's the same thing with, like, jeans. I was talking about Levi's, how, like, there are $500 pairs of jeans, but your average person isn't buying that shit. They're like, why would I buy a $500 pair of jeans when I get a pair for $50 or $40, you know?
So it's official. Captain Morgan's is the Toyota Camry of alcohol.
We go that far. We go a little bit higher than that.
No. Okay. So hybrid Toyota Camry.
So tying back in.
Sorry, B. You had a question. I kind of.
Well, I was going to ask if you couldn't drink whiskey anymore, what would be the next alcohol? Well, what slots in number two?
Probably be wine and Armagnac. Probably be number two.
Beer. I thought he was going to say sober. Just go sober.
Nah, I ain't that desperate. You know, in these times, you need something to take your mind off it. So, you know, whiskey's first. I'd probably say Armagnac and wine is next. Then somewhere in there. I mean, actually, I like absinthe, but absinthe is the kind of thing, like, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's not dangerous like anything's wrong with the liquor. It's just that, like, you drink too much of that shit, it's a horrible hangover. You do stupid shit on it sometimes. It's like, yeah, so you got to be careful. You pull that shit out of the cabinet once in a while. You know what I mean? You don't make, it's not a regular drink for me. Rum, aged rum would probably be after that stuff. And then somewhere in there, I guess. Vodka's low down the totem pole. I guess maybe gin's after that, then vodka. From a cocktail point of view, vodka and gin are much easier to work with. And so is wine than whiskey. But yeah, that's kind of my breakdown. If I were to be forced to not drink whiskey, which would be pretty rough. I don't know who would be that mean to me to make me not drink whiskey.
One thing I'm wondering about here, Kurt, is I've just reading a few articles and whatnot. I've started to see kind of like a trend towards promoting like black owned or people of color owned like distilleries and spirit brands. How popular are they, and are there good ones that we should look out for?
I'd say they're definitely popular. It's strange. It's like they were having a moment before any of this other stuff happened. Like I remember being at a whiskey festival and people were talking to me about Uncle Nearest before it came out. Uncle Nearest was one. I was like, I was in Europe and it was like a deal there. And I was before it was actually officially released. So that's one where it's blew up as far as a name brand. People are getting it. You know, they're putting it in cocktails. You can find it in the stores. Because understand, it's like whether you're doing whiskey or wine or beer, that shit is hard. You're up against established brands. You're doing beer, no matter what you like, you're up against friggin' Budweiser, you're up against Heineken. Like those things exist, people know to go buy it. So for you to attract people's attention to come get your beer or your whiskey or your wine, it can be a struggle. But I did some research, even though some of the shit I knew already, but just I had to back up my own thoughts. So I'm interested in the guy in Minneapolis. So that's Denord Craft. Unfortunately for them, their warehouse got damaged, you know, during all the ruckus in Minneapolis. But guy had a good rep, knew what he was doing. And I tell people this because people make the comparison for craft whiskeys. When with a craft whiskey, what you get the pleasure of is kind of seeing them grow. Think of them like they're a kid. And you see that kid at 5 and you see that kid at 10 and like, oh, the kid's kind of, you know, they're clumsy and they're tripping over their feet when they're 5. And then like at 10, you know, wow, the kid got all kind of agile. They're like, you know, jumping over shit and climb a fence. The more time that the distiller or the company has to work on it, work on their spirit and to work on like, hey, what's our best? Because now, like, when you start, you're just happy to put something out that tastes decent. But you have time now to refine it. What's the best cut? What's the best way to age it? What's the best way to finish it? So, you know, with that in mind, I said Denord is one. I mentioned Uncle Nearest. Uncle Nearest, like I said, it blew up a lot faster than I thought it would. I didn't think that it would become as popular and as like a name brand as fast, but that's great. You know, they're in a great position to do what they're doing. They don't get pushback from Jack Daniels, which is great. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's almost like they're working like this on that stuff, which is great.
And there's a pre-existing connection with Jack Daniels there, right? Is that part of the history? I thought I saw.
Yeah, the history is that Uncle Nearest taught Jack Daniels how to distill. So basically their take is like, without Uncle Nearest, you wouldn't have Jack Daniels. Mm. Jack Daniels isn't really like running away from that. They're like, yeah, no, that's true. We're, you know, we're cool with it. That's fine. And I'm like, hey, you know, that in and of itself is an achievement and it works out well for everybody. Now this, unfortunately for me, partially because of, you know, Corona, it's like, well, all the whiskey festivals where I get to taste stuff, haven't had those. I got to go to one in Norway and one in London very beginning of the year, like January, February, and I'm on lockdown since Feb. So there's stuff I want to taste, but I haven't tasted yet, but I'm interested in. And so there's another one that I found that it's a gin made in Africa. Hey. And it's called Mayin Gin. And part of why I'm interested in it is this. I had the pleasure of interviewing the master blender for Johnny Walker. His name is Jim Beveridge. And that's his real name. It's not spelled like the regular Beveridge.
Jim Beveridge.
Yes. And he's tall, thin, really smart, scientist-looking guy. And I asked him a question about scotch. And I said, like, you know, because Diageo has, like, you know, 27, 28 distilleries, perhaps more now. And I said, were there anything you wanted? Any flavor you wanted or any whiskey you wanted in the Scotch world that you didn't already have in-house? And he thought about it for a while. Don't get fired, whatever you're going to say. And he was like, you know, for Scotch, no. But for whiskey, you know, some of the Asian whiskeys are interesting because they get flavors we don't get. And I think with this African gin, I imagine that if that comes here, there are flavors that are going to be in that gin that you don't get in the gins that are here, because they're going to be, you know, they're going to be using different things. They'll be, you know, different flavors, whatever. And that makes for new cocktails. Like, you're making a cocktail and all of a sudden you got another option. You got this gin that gives you a different flavor. You can make a different mix with this thing. And so I'm looking forward to get my hands on that and see what I can do, you know. And then there's a rum called 10 to 1 Rum. And the person who runs it is from, he's of Trinidadian descent. So I'm kind of curious to see if his old spiel is to kind of upgrade the standing of rum like we're talking about. So I'm kind of curious to see if he can do it and see how it plays out. You know, maybe he can, if he does it right, can elevate rum. He was like a junior exec at Starbucks. So I'm gonna assume he's well-financed. And rum is an open market. You know what I mean? It's like, because there's no high-end rum that comes immediately to mind, if you could slide in there and get people to follow you along, it's like, you know, you've kind of set up your own lane. There's nobody in there with you. You know, everybody's going to go get their normal Bacardi, Captain Morgan's, whatever. If you got some kind of, let's say, really good tasting quality aged rum, you know, you got a window where people can, you know, you can bring them in. And finally, and this one isn't a, it's whiskey. There are two Indian whiskey companies. One is Paul John, and the other is Amrut. And they've been leaning into the fact that, like, the same way that Kavalan can make whiskey really fast, Kavalan's this Taiwanese whiskey company. It gets, because it's so hot in Taiwan, they can make a whiskey that's a four-year-old that tastes like a 12-year-old. Mm. Basically, the aging you would get in Scotland, it gets compressed for them in a much shorter period of time. Well, same thing in India, same thing with Amrut and Paul John. And so they're making these really good whiskeys that are young relative to what the price of Scotch would be. And these whiskeys are competitive with Scotch, like either price-wise or flavor-wise, but they can make it faster. So one of the big things with the price and the issue with Scotch is it takes a while. Like, unlike gin, even wine, you know, the part of the expense is, oh, you want to put out a 10-year-old whiskey? It might take you 12 years, not including getting the financing. Let's say you have your financing's in place. It'll take a year to build a distillery, another year to get your permits, all other crap. Then you got to distill it. You got to put it away. And you're going to wait 10 years to get your first bottle out. With these guys, they got big distilleries and they're cranking out lots of juice. And again, it's young, but it's tasty. They're winning awards. They can ramp it up. So they got, you know, you can get the whiskeys everywhere. They're ones I would look for.
That's interesting. So, and it's a different technique than the other Indian whiskey companies that have been using, or they just haven't quite?
What's funny is that the Indian whiskey companies prior, a lot of them did. Remember I talked about that whiskey, the American Imperial, where they were trying to like colorize vodka? A lot of companies in India years ago, not now, they would just make rot gut and just call it whiskey and just make it do whatever. Now, with these two companies, they've kind of prioritized, they want to compete with Scotch, they want to compete with bourbon. Like, and that's the thing for everybody I've mentioned. It's like, they're not looking to get put in a niche where, like, okay, well, I have my little company, I'm doing whatever else. Like, no, on whatever level, they want to compete with their brand, their spirits. So, yes, Amrut and Paul John are whiskeys that are distilled in India, but they don't want to be stuck in a category of, oh, it's Indian whiskey. They're like, no, we want it to be that we're as good as the same Scotch you would get. You know, we can make whiskeys that stand up to that stuff. We can make stuff that beats that stuff in an award, you know, for the international tasting competitions. And, this, you know, I'm curious to see about some of the stuff I mentioned, like the rum, where I'm like, I want to see where that stuff's at. So I may have to make some phone calls. Maybe they can mail me something. You know what I mean? So I can't go to the store and buy nothing, you know.
There you go. I guess I got a quick question on a couple other brands that you didn't mention. Just wondering if you had a chance to taste them. Guidance?
Seen it, haven't tasted it yet. I'm trying to think of why. Yeah, I think it's part of it is my exile from society, being stuck in my apartment. Because, you know, normally, again, you go to a festival, a whiskey festival, everything's there. So, you know, like, that's how I tasted Uncle Nearest. It happened to be, I was at a festival, and people were pouring it, and I'd heard about it, so, like, I went and got some. I don't remember where Guidance is. Because which one is the one that's in, or it's Burroughs is the one in... There's one in Louisville with Three Brothers. And I can't remember which one they were. But yeah, and I was impressed with the fact that they were actually doing it in Louisville, because like that's in the belly of the beast. Like that's where a lot of the big bourbon brands, they're kind of in and around there in Lexington. So they were ones I wanted to look out for, but I can't off the top of my head remember the name. It will come back to me though.
Fair enough. And I'll check my notes after as well. But while we have you here and you've educated us so much, could you tell us where we can find you, how we can follow you, how we can get some more of this knowledge when we need it?
Sure. Let's see. Let's think about this. I got a dozen Instagram handles. so let's just go for the main one, which is KurtM1. Because I'm so old, I've been on Instagram like forever. That's one of them. Or Whiskey Selections, which is the website. Also, I write on the Whiskey Reviewer website. So if you go there, you'll see lots of my reviews about whiskey, some of my notes on trips. Those work pretty well. You can also message me through there. Because, I know stuff sometimes. You know, I try. Like I said, it's weird with the whole lockdown thing. I think it's, you know, you guys have handled it better. You could probably do more. For here, it's like, nah, you just stay in the house. You know, it's easier.
I was going to say, you said you have a whole bunch of bottles in the house, so you should be stocked up pretty well.
I am. But the thing is like, you know, how you're saying, you know, you pick up the 3-pack or the 6-pack. It's like, yeah, I got a bunch of stuff here. I'd estimate 280 bottles in the apartment, hidden away. Yeah. I can't even look like I'm an alcoholic, so I got to put shit away. People are going to come by the house.
They're just all in his room. Yeah,
like stashed away in different parts of the house. My parents used to give me shit about it when I got into writing about spirits. And I said, listen, you know, when you come, you see stuff's exactly where you saw it 6 months ago. When you come and you see a box full of empties sitting by the door, then there's a problem. If I'm holding on to shit for 6 months or 3 months, I'm probably fine. If I ain't killing shit, you're probably good, you know. I'm trying to think. I'm working on a Facebook page because, you know, it's funny. I did the book, but of course, I spent all my time working on the book and not working on, I should put some place where people can track me down. Apparently, I'm on Amazon as well. But I would say here, whiskeyselections.com, because you can email me there if you have any questions. Because I'm happy to kick out free advice. I'm happy to do paid advice too, but, you know, free advice works.
Fair enough. Well, we've asked you all the easy questions, so now we're going to get into a part that we call the gauntlet. We're just going to hit you up with a series of questions. First thing that pops in your head, just give us the answer right away, and we'll just keep it moving that way.
Okay.
All right. So what's the meanest thing you've ever said to someone?
Ooh, all right. Friend's sister, I used to drive her to school, and she woke up late, so she was making the rest of us late. So I basically had to drag her out of bed to, like, put her in the car to go, and she was worried about makeup, and I was telling her to just put a bag over her head and shut the F up. That was me at 18 or 17. That's pretty mean.
You know? Okay.
That sounds about nice.
Celebrity crush.
She was messing with my time. Like, I gotta go to school. Like, you know, why am I waking you up? Like, I don't want to be waking nobody up.
All right. If you were stuck in a TV show for a month, what show would you choose?
That one's kind of hard. Probably an old episode of one of the Anthony Bourdain ones. There's booze and there's food in there, so I'd probably be all right. You know what I mean? even if it was somewhere like the weather was garbage, you're like, yeah, but I know this fool's going to eat and drink something okay, so.
As long as it doesn't end the same way. What is something that you look back on and are super embarrassed by?
What was this now?
What's something that you look back on and you're super embarrassed by?
Let's see. I missed nothing with hair. I managed to not have any crazy hair mistakes. Good question. You know what? Probably my second car. My first car was going to be a 74 Comet that, but my, you know, it's like poor man's Mustang. It had like basically like a low end Mustang engine in it. So like body was shit, but you're like, hey, it's kind of quick though.
Body's just falling apart.
It will kick up some dust. So it happened that my dad had a car accident. He was fine, but totaled that car. So then my first car that I had was like a 1980 Citation. So, like, you know, it wasn't cool. It wasn't vintage. It was kind of this, like, white four-door thing. Only good thing about it was I had a big back seat. So, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, well, I know. But the rest, it wasn't, like, what I wanted was, like, the 74 Dart that somebody else had. I'm like, yeah, the Dart's kind of a shit car. That's a big lead sled, but it had a big engine and a big back seat. And it would be fast. Still would handle like hot garbage, but it would just be a cooler car. That would be a bitch to park.
What is your favorite snack?
My favorite snack?
Yeah.
Let's think about that. Strangely, of late, it's been bacon. I would cook bacon and just put it away, cut it up, put it in the fridge. And like there to put in like, you know, you make a salad, put in some bacon. How's it coming in? Just grab some of the bacon, eat that shit. Like, that's my snack.
There you go,
bacon,
man.
Canadian bacon.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's like, or get some fat back. You know, it's like, yeah, you get some big, big, thick piece of bacon. Eat that. You know, it's just protein. You know, it'll go away. So.
Okay, what's what's one song you know by heart?
Ooh. It's been a while.
It's Been a While by Stain. I didn't have you pegged for a classic rock kind of guy.
Probably like some old Al Green track. I used to be in a band and played bass. And I'm thinking it's like, shit, you should know some stuff. You had to sing and play bass in them damn songs. So like they should be in the back of your head.
What was the name of that band? What was the name of that band?
I think the name of the band was Core. Played there in D.C. I remember playing back in USSR by the Beatles. Which wasn't that hard because it's basically a knockoff of a Beach Boys song, but I could probably do that one. Maybe it's been a while, but I'm getting old. All that drinking ain't helping my remembering songs, but I'd say that one.
And what's the best part?
Mine's CNC Music Factory.
What, which one? I Got the Power or the other one?
Everybody Dance Now.
Oh, okay. All right.
What? What's the best part about living in New York?
Pre-corona, it was that pretty much anything you wanted to do could be done. You know, you wanted to eat Scandinavian food, then there was a Scandinavian restaurant. You want to go to see, somebody play Touch of Evil on the big screen, go to see some vintage movie, it could be done. You want to go to an opera? Fine. You want to drink something random or go to a West Indian restaurant? Easy. Now, with everything locked down, you can't really do much. All the cool stuff's got to put away. You just got to suck it up with what you got, you know.
What's the best pizza in your area?
By me? I'd probably say I'd still go into, like, the West Village and hit up, like, John's. I mean, there's some. John's is pretty good. There are other places that are a little bit better. The problem here is that, a lot of people make pizza. It's always the issue of is the crust. Messing up the crust is usually the biggest crime. After that, it's like, you know, it's the cheese. Putting too much cheese and it's all rubbery, I'm like, yeah, I don't want that shit. You know, it's the right combo. Like with a combo, it's kind of like, it's basically the pizza version of putting in shitty ice into my drink.
And we'll let you out of here on this one. Nice and easy. What's the thing that makes you the most sentimental?
Ooh. Probably still, you know, I'd say music, but the weird thing is, you guys ever see a cartoon called Star Blazers? It's from the 70s. It's Japanese, pre-anime. It had a big spaceship that had to go from one place to fix something and come back to the Earth. I was watching that shit the other day, and I started to cry. And I'm like, what the hell's wrong? And I remembered, like, I had a friend of mine passed away, and, like, we had watched this shit. I hadn't seen it since then. I had forgotten, you know, but also I'm like, what the hell's wrong? And I'm like, oh, yeah. So it's probably cartoons, because now I'm an old bastard. So, you know, it's like the shit I watched when I was a little kid, you know, I'm watching it now, and I'm like, how the hell did 40 years pass? You know what I mean?
While you're sipping on the most expensive whiskey man has ever seen.
That's there are pros and cons. Like, old me gets to do what 10-year-old me couldn't do, which is, you know, run around the world and go visit places and drink and sit in shitty bars, great bars, and have booze in my house. You know, but then, you know, my knees hurt and, you know, there's all the crap of getting older. So, yeah, there's a trade-off on some level.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Kurt, once again, thank you for joining us. And we bumped up the time a little bit here on you. So really appreciate you sticking around. And I think we've learned actually a whole hell of a lot from this interview. So
tons.
Well, it was my pleasure. Feel free to hit me up if you guys need anything. I mean, email me because I know you have my email. any questions you have, or you want me to give you a list of, like, you know, you guys can get a price range of some booze you want. I'll tell you what to get and where to get it.
I just followed you, so I'll keep an eye on that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got some pictures, like, you know, cars, music, booze, records. I still like vinyl, so that's one of them things.
All right. That is awesome. That is awesome. And we will be in touch because I think we're going to try to have a cocktail off here by the end of the summer between the three of us. So you'll probably get three separate emails. Everyone looking for some tips here.
Yeah. No, I'd be happy to. You guys tell me what it is you like, and I'm happy to suggest for each of you what cocktail would work for you.
I can tell you what's going to be Bell's. His subject is just going to be, what's a drink with lots of sugar in it?
What's the sweetest? So you're talking high C sweet? Like Hawaiian punch?
I like tiki drinks. We're talking like
sunny D sweet. Okay.
Yeah, like orange crush sweet. Okay.
Like, yeah. So I'm going to make you guys know.
Grow punching my chest. I'm like, oh, it might hurt. All right.
Where you start limping in the end. That's the drink he wants.
Okay. All right, that's fine. I can work on that. There are ways.
All right, take care.
Man, thank you for being on the pod. That was awesome.
Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Thirst World Problems Podcast. For more exclusive content, follow us on Instagram @ThirstWorldPod. Make sure to subscribe, like, and share.